A quick note for our listeners. This Radio Parkies presentation is sponsored by YOPN Network and includes people who have been living with Parkinson's for quite some time. The vocal challenges that you hear are due to the progression of this disease as well as deep brain stimulation surgeries. And we come as we are here. Everyone has a purpose and a contribution, and everyone is welcome. Thank you for listening.
You are unique, active, determined, resilient. You are not your diagnosis, and you are not alone. This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.
Welcome to Radio Parkies, sponsored by Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Today, we're into the second half of a three-part series on mental health. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Dr. Charles Dent.
I wanted to introduce myself. I'm Ellen Bookman, advocate, blogger, and co-host of the Young Onset Parkinson's Network Living Well Starts Here podcast. And I have YOPD, just like the rest of us, except Dr. Dent. And I wanted to welcome everyone to the second installment of our mental wellness advocacy series. The goal is to educate those living with YOPD that our emotional health is as important as the medical management of the disease. And obviously we all have YOPD. One of the things about YOPD is that younger people like us experience the disease differently than those who are diagnosed older, in part due to their different life circumstances, not necessarily symptoms, but just where we are with kids. It's still working, not retired. And what we're going to do is focus on the obstacles common to those living with YOPD and offer ways to manage. So we can't do this without the expertise of professionals. And today our guest is Dr. Charles Dent. He's fabulous. He is a licensed mental health first aid trainer. He's a PhD. He's an executive and mental health coach, author, speaker. He is a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps. Thank you for your service. So I'm going to turn it over to him because some of the things we're going to talk about are the things that are common. So career, how to tell your work, young children at home, and taking your mental wellness seriously as part of all of these issues that may come up. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Dr. Dent, and we'll just jump in as necessary.
Well, hey, I'm really an honor to be here with you guys to talk about this. And, you know, I love the fact that we need to get into the mental health aspect of PD, because sometimes we don't talk about it, or we don't have the right people in our corner to be able to express the anxiety, the depressions, and everything that comes with it, the frustration. I mean, the unknowns. I always like to talk about what are the unknowns when it comes to our mental health, our physical, emotional, even spiritual health, because some people do rely on their faith in getting them through what they have to go through. And if those pieces are missing in the puzzle, sometimes I think they are missing in the puzzle, and we don't turn around and say, you know what is missing in my life? Who is my therapist? You know, I know you got occupational therapists and all these other ones, but who is my mental health coach or mental health therapist to help me navigate through this? And if those pieces are missing, how healthy is the person? So I want to talk about those things that we have to do. Like, you want to talk to your children about Parkinson's, you want to talk to your coworkers or your boss about it. And then also, how do you share this with your partner? And what are the things that you need to put in place so that your mental health can be just as powerful and vital as anything else in your life?
One of the issues that happens immediately following a diagnosis is that nobody tells us what you just said, that there are these mental wellness issues that can come up. And if people are left to their own devices, it can be catastrophic. So that's our first sort of point that we want to make. And that's the whole point of doing this mental wellness series.
I can't imagine all the relationships I might have done a little differently. I can't imagine all the language I could have learned had I known, had the doctors who diagnosed me first just mentioned mental health, even anything about it, or warned me about the dopamine agonists, what a different life it could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's, you can take medication for certain things, but then there are also a change in your diet to help you with your mental health. You know, and so a lot of times people don't understand it. So who told you to get a nutritionist? You know, get a nutritionist in your life so that you can know exactly the foods that you need to incorporate for your mental health. And no one's telling you guys this. No one's saying, you know, here's the team of people that we have in your life that's going to help you navigate so that you can have a quality of life even as you have been diagnosed. So all the prevented things need to take place at the beginning. So as the disease progressing, you got better tools in your toolbox. You gave yourself a better chance to have a quality of life. So I think doctors just can't diagnose anymore. They got to really have a team of people around you, surrounding you, even a support group to be able to talk about these issues so that you can have a good vital quality of life. It is a shame that we can do this for athletes, right, Mike? We can do this for athletes and everything else. We can put millions and millions of dollars behind an athlete putting a ball in a basket, kicking a football and anything, but we can't do this for people to have a quality of life like you guys.
One of the things based on what you just said is collaborative care. So when you walk out of that diagnosis appointment, maybe there's even a list of just a brochure that says mental health is important and here's some of the topics. So we call that a collaborative care.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good to have that across the board, because then you know that you have a sense of hope that I don't have to go out here and try to find all this information myself, that the people are here to help me.
To bring up the counterpoint, when I was first diagnosed 16 years ago, I didn't want to hear anything about what's going to happen. I think you nailed it in the beginning when you said the fear is the unknown. I feared the unknown. I didn't want to hear about it.
Same. I think a lot of us have had that. Would you have, did you say that you would have jumped more into the mental health aspect of it had you known?
If I could look back, I'd jump right into it now, but I didn't get a therapist until I was 10 years into this disease. I read at DBS, so I got my first therapist. I read through three before I found the right one.
Yeah, it's a very important aspect.
Is that perhaps a generational and also a gender-based thing? Because I'm noticing that everybody in the generations under me has at least one therapist. Some of them see a therapist for life. And I'm like, wait, isn't the job or the idea to get you sort of functional by yourself? Maybe not. Maybe we all need constant help.
Well, think about this. In the military, we say we need a therapist and I need a coach. I got a therapist and I got a coach. And you need those in your life to help you be able to process some of the things that you're dealing with mentally. And then you think about your children, that they come alongside of you in this. Where's their therapist? How do they get the help? How do they really process everything that they're going through? Without saying, is it my mom dying, my dad's dying? What is going on in their lives, and how's this going to impact me? Or even the unknowns with them, would I end up with Parkinson just as well as my parents? So, you know, am I fearful of new relationships now because I have this disease? So you have to have these conversations around the table when you talk about, I need to have this conversation with my children. I need to allow my children to process it. I need to allow them to bring their emotions to the table so I can really hear what they're feeling, even if I disagree with them. But I need to know where they are. And if parents are not having this conversation with their children early, and even I have found out in my research that, you know, some people with Parkinson end up having children after the diagnosis. So you got to be able to help children navigate, because if they come into the scenery, they are born into it. They are born into your disease. And somehow you have to help your children to be able to understand it more, because the unknowns out there are more fearful than the knowns.
Can you just define between therapists, which everyone knows, and then the coaching side of it?
Coaching is helping you move forward. The therapist is taking you back to deal with all the issues that sometimes you might be feeling, that Parkinson is a sign of a punishment. You could say, you know, how is it that I'm being punished? Especially if you're walking in the spirituality of this, and you may see it as a punishment, but it may not be. It's not. You got to be careful how people define this as a punishment to you, and you keep asking why. So you have to, the therapist takes you back to be able to deal with the why question. The coach takes you forward to deal with the what and the hows. How am I navigate through life now? And I think it's so important that people understand the difference between coaching, consulting, counseling, therapist, and mentoring. I think all of those need to be crystal clear, because some of you might just need a mentor to come alongside of you, to walk with you through it, to be able to teach you how to navigate through life. It is, like you said earlier, it's come back to the fact, and it is a collaborative effort to be able to bring the right people in your circle to help you get to the place you need to be. You can still have a quality of life with Parkinson.
Why do you think that doctors or physicians don't take the time to say, you'll need a team, it's going to take a village? They obviously know what we need because they've been doing this for years. Presumably, you don't just go to someone's on their first day, like the dentist in the Carol Burnett show, where they, you know, we obviously have doctors who are seasoned. Why do you think they leave that part out?
Well, Heather, it's just like when I was telling my wife last night, I said, when you don't have, okay, let's say this. If I've never been exposed to, like, doctors need coaching. They need a collaborative effort, a group of people around them to be able to discuss where they are. And doctors sometimes stop growing in other fields. They just stick with the field they're in. You know, and so just like if I'm in the United States Marine Corps, and my first job was to learn how to fire a weapon. But in addition to that, I need to learn some other skills. See, and I think sometimes we do people a disservice because when they're in school, they're not exposed to this. Like, for example, clergy is not exposed to mental health when they're in seminary. Or clinicians are not exposed to religion or that when they're in school. If there's no exposure to it, you cannot ask for them to produce something that they don't possess. And I think that's the thing. They're not exposing themselves to different people to do like Ms. Bookman said, let's have a collaborative effort, a group of people around us so that we can provide the best care to our patients. Because I think we forget that we are treating people and not their disease.
Right.
Out of my doctor's appointment, not one word. And then I was even told that anxiety and depression are not part of Parkinson's, but we know, I've been doing tons of research, that mood changes are also due to a decrease in brain chemicals that impact mood. So not only do we have depression, anxiety just happening, but there's something going on in our head. Maybe talk a little bit about that side of it.
Well, you're going to have moods, you're going to have depression, you're going to have anxiety, and you're going to have sexual dysfunctions. So all of those, but they don't talk about those things because we want to be politically correct. You know, instead of saying, you know, these are the things that's going to happen. And here's something that we need to be honest with you, because depression, your children may end up in the same state of depression because they don't know how to handle what you're dealing with. Especially when they start seeing the tremors, they seeing that the slurred speech and everything that's going on. And they sit in the corner like, how do I help my mom? How do I help my dad? I don't know. I feel helpless in this situation. Because we need to have more education. We need to have more conversations like we're having now with mental health people as well as doctors. Doctors need to be more educated about all the signs and symptoms, everything that's going to happen to you. And don't just put you in a forest and say, hey, figure it out yourself.
So it's chemical and causal.
Yes.
And it's funny because I had created a mentoring program, and in all of the research we did, and I did like these unscientific surveys, so many people with Parkinson's, I see them in these chat groups, like, I'm feeling really depressed. Are you guys feeling depressed? Why am I feeling depressed? Why are they walking out not knowing why they feel depressed? That's the problem in that diagnosis appointment. And so let me just go into when you talk about kids. So my kid's older, she's 28. She holds it all in. She doesn't want to talk about it too much. Should I be funneling just a few pieces of information to her? Because she's not young, she's an adult, but she still doesn't have any idea what's going on. And I feel like I need, well, today I feel, so I don't know, I'm not sure how you do that with an older child.
Well, I think you're right about that. And that's when I think, you know, because when I teach parenting, I think parenting days meet. This is Charles Dent now. I think parenting days end at a certain age. And I think parents learn how to coach their children at another age. So if you turn around and ask your daughter, and I don't ask this question, Ellen, I don't ask, how are you feeling? I ask what you're feeling. And I think if you turn around and ask your daughter, what are you feeling at this moment? Not how you're feeling, what are you feeling at the moment? That's when the anxiety and the depression and everything, the anxiousness falls in, because we never ask, tell me what you're feeling at the moment. We want to know how, but what means so much more. Like you ask people today, how are you doing today? How are you doing today? And they just say, I'm fine. But then you ask the question, what are you feeling at this moment? It can shift how the conversation will go.
When you ask him that, what would an answer be?
I'm sitting in silence. I'm not trying to stack my questions, and I'll wait. And if they don't want to, they will share about what they're feeling, but how they're feeling is a totally different thing. What you're feeling at the moment. I'm feeling excited. I'm feeling a little depressed. I'm feeling a little sad. I'm feeling a little lonely. What are you feeling in the moment?
Apathetic.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and that plays a major role in our society. Or I'm feeling hopeless. I don't know how to help you, Mom. You know, there's certain things out there that we can help people read and understand, even with the certain things I think parents ought to be able to teach their children is to be able to have this conversation. What I would do, I recommend you have it around dinner. You have it around a meal, not at home, but at a restaurant. I would recommend you talking to them away from that space in a restaurant, have a place, hey, let's meet for lunch today and just see what they're saying. And then look at their face, pay attention to the nonverbal communication. Do they feel embarrassed because you're trembling in public? Then you can start picking up, do you feel embarrassed when you're with that other people looking at you? So there's some issues there that can help your child navigate through what they're feeling at the moment.
That's a good point. Mine doesn't live here, so she doesn't see the day-to-day changes of the disease. So yeah, that's good. So what about, let's talk a little bit about careers. We talk to so many people with YOPD, and it's always like, I haven't told my boss. I don't know when to tell my boss. So if you could talk, and these are people that are still working and functioning, but may not be soon.
Mm-hmm. So I think when you start looking at the American with Disability Act, I think they need to start paying attention. Here's what I wrote. I said, get the facts before you disclose it. Get all the facts that you need to know from the American Disability Act, because if you don't get the facts, and when you do expose it, or disclose it to your HR department, everybody, you may miss out on some of the things you need to know. And then I highly recommend that you encourage, once you start dealing with this, you encourage your employer to get the facts as well from the American Disability Act, the ADA. You get the facts. Because if you don't have the facts, get the facts. Just get all the facts, all the legalities, everything, nail it down before you have the conversation with your employer.
Is it legal? Are there legal things that
you Yes, there are legal things that you need to get from the Disability Act, because you know, because the job has to make accommodation for you when you start paying attention to it, when you cannot do the multitask, you can't do what you used to do. You need to get all the facts. I highly recommend you get all the facts you can get before you approach your employer. And then when you approach your employer, you do the same thing with them. You encourage them to get all the facts, and then you have another meeting.
You are listening to the Young Onset Parkinson's Network podcast, heard live every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on RadioParkies.com.
I think there's so many people out there who don't know what to say or do. Any like advice on the way to open that conversation with your boss?
Well, I think first of all, that will go, I will come back and have the conversation with my partner, or I'll have a conversation with a coach or someone of that nature before I have the conversation with them. I would basically get somebody on my team to be able to help me navigate all the bullet points that I need to have before I open up to my boss. Because once I'm first diagnosed, I need to start doing my homework. And I don't need to put it off. I need to be aggressive with this, because my career is at stake right now. So all the things I would not be able to do later on. I'm not going to be able to answer all the emails. I'm not going to be able to do all the stuff I used to do. But I got to face that fact as well, because now I got to deal with this. Because here's one of the things that I'll tell everybody who's dealing with this. You don't have a disability. You just have different abilities. That's what we need to help people with. You don't have a disability. You have different abilities now. You're not going to have the same abilities you used to have, but you have different ones now, because you're gonna start reprogramming and training yourself to do other things that you never done before. So, but yeah. If you have the right accommodation by the ADA and you do all your homework, you might need to talk to an attorney. You might need to have somebody alongside of you to be able to say, hey, what are my legalities? What are the legalities now I've been diagnosed with this? So that I can know what are the bullet points I need to address with my employer. But on the flip side of it, once the employer start doing their homework, you want to be able to ask them to do the same thing.
Would you go to HR first, or would you go directly to your boss?
I would go to HR first, and then I would have HR and my boss, let's talk to them together so we can work together around it, especially if I've been in the company a long time and they know my credibility and everything. They know my character, they know how I am. I want to be able to have this conversation with people, because the whole thing about being transparent or being vulnerable, it's like you want to be honest with people. You don't want to have any secrets, because then you don't want to walk around eggshells while you're working. Who would know? Do they know about this? You know, what's going to happen if they find out I have this disability? That's why I say you don't have a disability. You have different abilities.
That's a great point.
I was just going to add that I learned so much from populations of people who are marginalized or people who have had to fight for what they have in a way that I feel like I have to fight now. For example, when I go out into the world seems like it doesn't want me here. I do not feel welcomed. I do not see ramps when I need them. I usually get to the elevator and the elevator happens to be broken. Oh, well, no problem for anyone else, but it's a problem for me now. I moved to housing that doesn't have stairs on purpose because I kept falling. And, you know, a couple of falls and we're out. I don't mean to say it so plainly, but it's true. A lot of people do not recover from the big falls. So I've learned how to, you know, stop, drop and roll and all this. And it's all about adaptation. But I really listen well to people who have had to sort of have this Sisyphean task of trying to fit in when the world and everybody around them seems to be saying, no, you aren't welcome here. So what would you say about that? Like, what year did you enter the military as an example? Was the military, you know, welcoming?
Well, because the piece that I work on here, where I am now, I'm dealing a lot with race, systemic racism, structural racism. The question is for you is, where's home? Our society today is baffled by the fact that we have all these, you have a plethora of things that's invading us today, and we haven't made people feel at home. You know, so like the elevator's not working, but there's nobody there say, let me help you. You know, yep. Make you feel at home. Like, it's okay to be where you are. It's okay for me to be an Afro-American male on this call, and having the knowledge I have without somebody saying, we never heard this before, we never done this before, or anything of this nature, and somebody, the three of you sitting in the car going like, I wish I'd have known this before. Because even when I dealt with PTSD and everything happened in the military, the trauma, the combat trauma, the vicarious trauma, everything that's happening in our society today, gun violence and everything, nobody want to say it's because people don't feel at home in this country any longer, that we are not making it feel like it's okay for me to be who I am without someone judging me for something that I'm not.
Right.
Where's home for Parkinson? Where's home? And that's what I'm hearing, Heather, is that the whole thing is, can I create a place, a space where people will feel at home?
You are listening to the Young Onset Parkinson's Network podcast, heard live every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on RadioParkies.com.
So that we need to bring more of awareness to everybody about how do we just, because we need to stop trying to treat the disease and treat the person.
How do you get ahead of it? Is it just telling people you have it, or how do you do it?
Well, you just said it, just being vulnerable, being transparent and getting ahead of it. Heather's getting ready to leave out the house. She already called some people telling she's leaving home. She already said, I'm going here. She already got a partner. She got a collaborative group of people on her team that's already making provisions to make sure she get back home safe.
Yeah, but now I have to tie my shoes.
Yeah.
I'll be there in 30 minutes.
No, just put on some slap. Stop buying tie on shoes, girl.
It's true. Buy them
slip on. That's what I used to tell people. I say, hey, that's why you get ahead of it, by buying slip on. That you don't have to do that anymore. You take advantage and get ahead of it. You know, you say, hey, I can't accommodate here any longer. So I need to get ahead of this. What else can I do for myself?
Can we also talk about humor? A lot of times with my children in particular, I'll pretend like I'm doing something and I'll be like, do this to them. And I'll be like, oh, Parkinson's. Just to see if they're paying attention. Like I'll kind of give them a little nudge or something. Or I'll say, what's this? Does this smell like up dog? Smell like up dog? And he'll be like, what's up dog? And he'll be like, I'm like, I don't know what's up with you. I got you. Like, I act like I'm not paying attention, you know? And then I get everybody giggling, or I'll do these tremendous sight gags, not on purpose.
Humor is medicine. Yes. And I think sometimes it's like when my daughter came back from Afghanistan, she was struggling with depression. I told her to go, I said, hey, okay, let me help you out quickly. Go watch a funny movie. I said, just go watch a funny movie. I told her to go watch Kevin Hart. She went to watch Kevin Hart. She came back. She said, I'm better off. I said, that's all you have to do. You have to break this cycle that you're in, and humor plays a major role in it. Absolutely. Yes, Mike.
Laughter and music can both create dopamine that we're all lacking.
Yep. So use music therapy. Use music therapy. And if you have good music, use music therapy. Get ahead of it. That's getting ahead of it. Play some music in your background. Just let music play. It's a powerful thing when you have music.
And I think finding something that you love to do. I was telling somebody on Facebook, and she was all depressed. And I said, just find one thing that you love that makes you happy. Just one.
Can you talk about how we're often accused of being, drunk, crazy, irrational, imperceptive, self-absorbed? I mean, I get that anyway.
You think about this the same thing. And I don't want to live in a cancel culture, like, how sometimes you start talking about something, people want to cancel out and go to some other subject. I want to tell you the key thing is our ignorance. We're just absolutely ignorant in our society about what Parkinson looked like. And how do we help people with it? We just need to be educating our communities and be able to help people say, hey, I understand it. We're so uneducated in so many areas of our lives that you see, even when you went to the physician and he diagnosed you, she diagnosed you, and then she threw you out into the wolves. It's like, come on.
Literally,
you figured life out yourself. No, we have to be more educated. We got to help people, and we got to educate families. We got to educate communities. We got to educate churches, pastors, and everything of this nature, because you'll be so surprised how ignorant the faith-based community is when it comes to Parkinson. This person is dealing with a demon. They got trembles and all this stuff happening. And you're talking about, no, dude, girl, come on. And then you don't want to go to church because people look at you funny. You know, they think something really wrong with you. And you're like, yeah, it is something wrong with all of us. I just got a different one. You just notice.
That's great.
You know, you just notice it more than you notice your own, you know? Right. So the key thing is we need to educate our community. And I think the American Disability Act need to do a better job educating the community. But I also think physicians need to be better educated and making sure we treat the person. Start treating the person and not the disease.
Or maybe manage the disease rather than try to treat it or fix it or cure it. Like I always get upset when people use the word cure or I'm going to fight this or they lost their battle with ... You know, I mean, coming from the military where we use these military terms in terms of like, say, cancer or something, it never felt quite right to me. How about we manage and we live with and we figure out a way to thrive with? What recommendations would you give on thriving and living best right now? Like, don't wait for the cure.
Yeah, I mean, take self-care. I think self-care is critical. I think I call it this, Ellen, I call this a DND. That means a do nothing day. When I have a do nothing day, I don't do anything, Mike. I do nothing. I don't let the dogs out. I don't water. I don't do any. I don't even come up to my office. I do nothing. And I mean, so if you don't take care of yourself, self-care is so critical in any field. And I think that's what we're missing in our country. We don't let our body tell us I need rest. I need my body. I don't listen to my body enough. Not just guys, men and women with Parkinson, but anything, because we don't take good care of ourselves. Look at our country. Look what, if you put us in the obesity category, where are we?
Oh,
you see us in the waste category of food and growing healthy foods. Look at our children today. I mean, everything is so critical. Somehow our country has lost its moral compass. We used to care for people. We have lost it and we need to recover it somehow. Even, I don't know where we start, but even here, it's like, we got to teach people how to better take care of themselves.
Well, it starts at the diagnosis appointment when this whole thing about motor versus non-motor, they say that at times the non-motor are more devastating at times than the motor. Exactly. Because we don't even know what's happening. That's a problem. So the advocacy needs to start with the doctors, but you and I have talked about and in creating a mental wellness advocacy program, which I'm working on, and you guys will see what I've started. But if we don't mention it right at the beginning, then we're all out there just feeling bad and not knowing. So let's talk a little bit about those other groups that we talked about clergy and people that go and really trust their clergy or whatever. What are some others that we could reach out to besides clergy?
Yeah, and clergy therapies, but I thought about people like, we should have a conversation with people in the chamber. And start seeing what they say. Here's the thing that I share this often with my wife. You have to first cast vision. Even though people don't buy into it initially, you have to cast it somewhere. So they know exactly what you're doing. You're building a team so that you can really help a person when they're diagnosed with Parkinson's and PD. As soon as they walk out that clinic, they know they got all the resources they need. It's at their disposal. They can talk to it with their children. They can have the conversation with their coworkers. I mean, their HR department, their bosses, they can have the conversation with their partners. Even though a lot of times a partner is going with the person and they come out with the diagnosis, but what about other people that you go have dinner with? You know, you home there, but like Heather, she's building a team of people around her. Mike, same thing, that when you leave home, the people know you're gone. You got in the head of the whole thing. There's a group, there's a support group. There's the support groups around you that would just tie into you. So when you leave home, that can also be faith-based communities. They're helping you, you know, getting ahead of it. So I found you in the grocery store. I said, Heather, I'm here. I'm at the grocery store. You let me know if you need me because I'm not going to help you because you just got different abilities I'm not going to sit here and make you feel like, but I'm here if you need me. And I'm sitting there with you. And you just say, hey, Charles, I need you to come over here. I got you. Because I'm just, you're just getting ahead of it. And I think that's what we need to do. Be so proactive that we help people get ahead of it.
What I'm enjoying is that you're empowering rather than, like, you're allowing for dignity. You're allowing for someone to not feel humiliated because we suffer from so much shame. Can you talk about the shame of not being able to be helpful? For example, my love language is acts of service. I want to help people. That makes me feel useful. It makes me feel like I'm offering you love. Now that I'm incapacitated, my acts of service are a little different. So well, can you talk about the shame we might feel?
Well, and you know that. It's a difficult thing because that's when the depression and the anxiety comes on because of the shame, because of the guilt. You know, then you are, that's why you need those wraparound services in your life. You need to have mental health. You need to have a therapist. You need to have these wraparound services because if not, you can relapse. I haven't done this yet, Helen. I haven't done this, the facts on how many death by suicide because of PD.
We've talked about euthanasia a lot, Mike and I, and I'm sure that Ellen, we've touched on it. We all think about it.
The most common phrase I've heard from everybody is, we don't want to be a burden.
I think the answer to that is, let's act like we're in the military. I've been diagnosed with PTSD. Okay, I'm going to be a burden to the government. I don't care if they like it or not. Well, I'm going to be a burden to someone. I have to face my own pride then, Mike, to realize my life is not like it used to be. So you're going to be a burden or someone. Let's just face that reality. That's what I'm saying about getting ahead of it. You're going to be a burden. I mean, you know, your dog would know when, if you even need to get, and one of the things I recommend for Parkinson's is people get service dogs when they find themselves getting into that position. I highly recommend you get a service dog because your service dog will be able to determine when you really need help. If you don't have one, I highly recommend you get one. Because that is going to help you because they will be able to help you relieve yourself of the burden. You know, and so I think sometimes it's just turn around and face this reality. This is my burden. This is my lot in life. And I got to accept it. I got to get to a place that I realize this is it. So here's, you remember the serenity prayer? And I said this to her, remember the serenity prayer? Well, I'm going to put all my energy. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put all my energy in the area that I can control. I'm going to put less energy in things I cannot control. That's the key thing. I'm going to put energy in what I can control, but I'm going to put less energy in what I can't control. And by doing so, it's going to help me navigate through life because you can't control the trauma. You can't control all the things that happen. But what is it that you can control? How much music I listen to, you know, music therapy, getting help I need so I can navigate through it. So I think it's some of the powerful truths that you come into is that I'm going to put energy in things I can control and less energy in things I cannot control. Yeah, I mean, see, if you're fighting when you're in denial, this is my reality. So can I accept this? Because that's what the serenity is. Can I accept the things that I cannot change? And change the things I can and have the wisdom to know the difference. So can I accept this? Can I get to a place that I can accept this? Or do I live with the mindset I'm trying to avoid my own reality?
Yeah, see, I'm behind everybody. They've had it longer than me. So I'm in that phase of, I need to explain my mood changes. I need to explain why I am so manic. And is that healthy?
Or do absolutely. I just...
leave it within.
Tell me about it. And you got to have the right, but you got to have the right therapist who's not in a hurry to push you out of the mood.
I'm very lucky. And I've heard from many people. I have a therapist who happens to have worked with PD patients. And she knows that actually she's a psychiatrist and she does therapy, which is very, you know, not normal. It's not a usual thing, but she knows the medications that mix and all that. But what happens to all, okay, so we have listeners out there. They may have just been diagnosed with YOPD. They have no idea what we're talking about. They go to their appointment, they get diagnosed, and we're all let out with nothing. What is the first step, if you're not part of a system that's going to offer you that, What's the first step that somebody should do when they walk out with no mental wellness information?
That's a tough question, because it varies based on the person. It varies based on the support the person has. It's based on family dynamic, family structure. It varies. If you walked out the room, you think about where's your support? What does support look like for you? I mean, that's the reality. It's support. Where's my support? Because if I don't have any support, tell me what's going to happen. I got to have a support system. And I'm hoping that you will have that before you go in. And when you come out, you can have these conversations with people who can help you navigate through every nook and cranny you got to go through, everything you got to deal with.
Well, I would say, to me, counselor, therapist, like you said, is probably a really good place to start, so you can start A, dealing with the diagnosis and understanding your mental health issues that may or may not appear. I was told, see you in 4 months. And I think we all got that, right, Michael? I mean, how many of us on this phone right now, on this call, got that? All of us.
Yeah, you see, Mike said how long it took him, almost, 10 years, Mike, before you realized you need it? See, you know, that's the average time on most people recognize they need therapy. It's almost about 10 years. Because I had one guy in a session one time, he said it took him 23 years before he realized he needed help. Because you think about the stigmas and everything, as Heather said about it, you know, we feel helpless now, the stigmas and the stereotypes and everything that's going on with any disease. So we have to overcome these barriers that we have put up before ourselves, because we don't want to own up to, you know, the embarrassment, the shame that comes with it. I got to be able to talk to someone. So I got to look at, where's my support? Because if I don't get the support I need, I'll probably be on the other end of despair.
Now, what about people who don't have much money to afford these things? How can they get the help?
Well, I think the key thing there is once you are diagnosed, is I think you need to start doing your homework. You need to definitely start doing your homework. You need to check with the DSA, the Disability Act. You need to start doing all the things you need to do to get the homework. You need to consider the deal. The American with Disability Act, the ADA. You need to do your homework. If not, go talk to someone. Find someone to talk to who has to deal with. Do research. You got Google. I always say go to Google College or Google Academy. Find you somebody you can talk to.
And the other thing about the Google is that always only stay within reputable organizations, APDA, Parkinson's Foundation, Michael J. Fox. These organizations are the ones giving you the right information. If you go somewhere else, you have no idea what you're reading and if it's right or not, and they mostly scare you. So really try and stay within the reputable organizations that are offering information.
Good point. That's where you find these Dr. McGillicuddy's secret recipe to cure Parkinson's, all these crazy ideas you see out there.
Just use essential oils.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not the information you need. Or you see people that are so, maybe have had it for a really, really long time and they've got terrible dyskinesia. And you think that's going to be me today or tomorrow. You need to understand that. I get all hyped up with this because it's a big problem.
It turns out that when we're desperate to get away from our pain, we also take some risks. For example, I had a spiritual advisor once who exploited me completely. Mm. You can leave this part of the interview in because that's what happened. Mm. Yeah. However, I don't think everyone does that. I'm just saying it'd be good if someone was, you know, had some boundaries, like with the HIPAA laws or whatever. You know, like if you see a therapist, such as a doctor, they've obviously, you know, they have some laws they have to attend to, but someone who's just like a meditation teacher might not be quite the same way. So be careful what you ask for and what you're looking for. Like what really, how can you play to people's strengths, you know?
Now you think about the first thing you got to ask yourself, would this person bring harm in my life? You got to ask those questions. Will they protect my privacy and my confidentiality? Are they HIPAA protected? Do they understand HIPAA laws? And if you don't have that, those are red flags saying, I need to find someone else.
What was the issue with the person?
Without going into too much detail, right. I was in so much pain. You know, when you're in pain, you look for everything. Like you'll try every self-help book and you'll start meditation. You'll try everything. Like I'm reading this book. It's a really great bedtime tale called The Places That Scare You. You know, we go, cause I was looking for emotional sobriety. I was looking for a little more stoicism, a little more calm in my life. So I thought, oh, a Buddhist meditation teacher. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that there are people everywhere in the world who do not have your best interest at heart. It doesn't mean they're necessarily bad people or sociopaths or anything. It simply means that they're looking out for something and it's not you. So Dr. Dent brings up a really good point about protecting and having the boundaries. So with discernment, we can find our support systems and our touchstones.
A lot of times with Parkinson's, you end up getting very selfish because you're looking internally. You don't look externally at other people. Is there any way people can look outside themselves?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I think you guys are saying it now about having the right therapist, right, the wraparound services in your life, it will give you a chance to look outside of yourself, but it's also helpful when you talk to another person who's dealing with Parkinson's. But I think the key thing is that you start to understand your medication, you understand your body functions, you start understanding everything about yourself because you're going to have to relearn some things that you never knew before. I mean, you're going to have to tackle what I said earlier today is those unknowns. I mean, those, like you were saying, hell, these scary areas in your life that you've never been in before. And then here's the other thing is facing your own immortality. You know, I mean, when I was first as a hospice chaplain in an oncologist, I always had to deal with death, but I had to face my own before I ever dealt with anybody else because I struggled when I had to deal with a death. But when I faced my own immortality, I realized then I can live a healthier life and I can help others who are dealing with it. And so I think that's when you have to get outside of yourself. You have to learn how to face the reality that, you know, I'm going to die with this disease. There's a possibility I'm going to die with it. Is that okay? So, you know, in just facing those realities and say, you know, that's okay with me.
We have so much grief because we have so many losses. So aside from the fact that death is the thing that's going to happen to everyone, we feel like we're going down quickly. Like our timeline got squished. We got a really crap hand. We start to act out. You know, we're taking these agonists that make us impulsive. And all of a sudden we become, like Mike was implying, like we become rather self-absorbed. Instead of thinking, how is Parkinson's affecting everyone around me? I'm just trying to squirm away from my own pain. So I'm grieving all these losses. I feel like I'm going to die young. You know, I mean, it took out the greatest fighter that ever lived. And they can say Parkinson's doesn't kill you, but it weakens the system to allow those comorbidities to come in. So we think about these things.
Yeah. And just think about what you just said, Heather. You said earlier that you felt like because your love language is surf. You're doing it right now. And I think that's why you need a coach sometime to walk alongside of you to say, you know, you're doing it right now, Heather. You're serving a community who's going to be listening to this, who's going to review this. You're serving now. So, and I think sometimes, Mike, when we have the right people in our circle, they can help us see things that we can't see ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you help. And that's when I'll tell you about, it's okay to be selfish when you're taking care of yourself, but don't stay within yourself. Because that's when the danger comes. That's when you start having these thoughts that you start replaying in your mind. And that's what you need, the mental health. You need that mental health outlets. Because you get hooked on a thought about, you know, all my best life is gone. And then Heather turns around and speak to somebody and go like, really? It's gone? Who knew this? Who say this is not my best life?
Heather and I talk like that often. She brings up a good thing I do. I bring up good things she does. Same with Ellen. Ellen does a lot of great things for people. She's going to do a lot more great things for people.
And we're all four of us extremely curious.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, because that's when I would tell you about Heather studying Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, Death and Dying, because it's not the grief that kills us. It's the dying that kills us. It's not the death. It's the dying. So if you read about the different stages of grief, you know, you start getting into the place that you can accept the fact that this is happening. That's when you grow and you start blossoming. You start saying, hey, you know, this is my lot. So I'm gonna deal with it. I'm a Black man, okay? I went through the civil rights movement. I have gone through a lot of racist areas, but this is my lot. I can get ahead of it and do something with it than sit in the rearview mirror, keep looking back and saying, what can I do? I can't change it. But what I can do is get ahead of it and be a better version of myself in the midst of it. So I'll tell the three of you, you work on a plan to become the best version of yourself, even in this. You still can work on you.
Why are you not walking around enraged? What do we do with this rage? Like, I just heard what you said, Dr. Dent. I'd be furious, probably. I don't know. I can't even imagine.
But that's when you get a coach. That's when you have a mental health. That's when you talk about, you know, I tell people that, you know, I had one client one time. She was really upset, Mike. She lost her grandmother. She lost her dad within 2 months apart. So I was on duty with her and she was angry. So I put everybody out of the room. And I told her, if you guys, you don't mind, just give me a moment with her. And I told her, it's okay. Be angry. I said, go right ahead. Just do it. Because it's therapeutic. If you can really just let it out instead of holding in, it's okay to be angry. I just told her I had one rule. Just don't break nothing in my space. That was it. And I said, you can be angry. And she was saying, I'm angry with God. I said, it's okay. Be angry with him. He can handle your anger.
Well, it was
so I'm like, I said, because she looked at me, I said, if he can't handle your anger, you need to find yourself another God.
You are listening to the Young Onset Parkinson's Network podcast, heard live every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on RadioParkies.com.
So, hey, I I'm going to tell you how that, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I mean, I really appreciate it. And Mike, nice to meet you. Hey, mm-hmm. I know we didn't meet 15 years, 16 years ago. We met now. And we can get ahead of everything and do better at what we need to do for each other. We treat the person. Start treating the person.
That'll do it for today, folks. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with part 3 of the mental health series. Thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, if you're struggling with mental health, you're not alone. Call a friend. Call a therapist. Call me. Anybody you can think of. Just call. Somebody will listen. Remember, you are loved and not alone. Have a great day.
I deserve good things.
I am entitled to my share of happiness.
I refuse to beat myself up.
I am an attractive person.
I am fun to be with.
Daily Affirmation with Stuart Smalley.
I'm going to do a terrific show today, and I'm going to help people because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.